present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Guardian read by Charlotte Green.
In Narbonne, France, 40 churchgoers sent off for a mail-order video of Bible stories. 40 porn videos were sent back to the faithful, two of whom complained.
Thanks to Ted Shepherd of Thirlwall for that. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Laurie Taylor. And before we start round one, here's a cutting from the classified section of the Isle of Man Courier.
For sale, electric chair, only £950. Ideal for wife.
Thank you, Mr. K. Lee of the Isle of Man, for sending that. Francis, whose flying start nearly took off without questions of cash?
I can't imagine what this is about. Actually, I did see a little piece, I think, in the Telegraph somewhere this week, saying there's an election coming up. One of those midweek lotteries, as they're known in the trade. But anyway, yes, Sir Gordon Downie was meant to be presenting a report about the sleaze, the general sleaze, and Major had promised last October on David Frost's programme that this would be out before the election. And amazingly, all these people like the Guardian, the Labour Party, believed him. And I find it's a fairly reliable rule in life that when Major promises something, you can kiss goodbye to it straight away. But sweetly, all these people like the Guardian are now very cross because they say Major promised that this would be out in time and instead he's prorogued Parliament early, especially to stop it appearing. Can't think why. But anyway, Neil Hamilton is now emerging without a stain on his character.
Can you prorogue anything else or only Parliament?
I thought you were going to ask whether he had a stain anywhere else except for his character.
He was very careful. He said, Hamilton said that he was very upset. He may be. He said, I'm very upset that the report hasn't been published, but I mean, he did have to say that really because he couldn't say, phew, what a bit of luck. That saved my bacon. So one doesn't know whether he meant it or not. But can I say, in the interests of bias, that I'm not going to be voting for the Conservatives? I'm only saying that because, in the interests of balance, somebody else on the programme now has to say that they are going to be voting for the Conservatives.
unless they say they're not voting for anyone at all, in which case.
Then someone has to say they're voting for everyone.
But it seems to me, John, have you noticed that the only two party leaders in this country who have titles, Sir James Goldsmith and Screaming Lord Such, are both regarded as members of the lunatic fringe? It's extraordinary. Whereas people like Major are taken seriously.
Mr. Major has been provided with a presidential-style Boeing 737, AirTex 1. As a free coach tour for his loyal followers, this might soon be swapped for a minicab. Jeremy, who are getting primed for prime time?
John Major and Tony Blair. Well, if he's going to do this man of the people, chirpy, cockney thing, how does it fit with getting a 747? I mean, shouldn't he just cling tight to Mary Poppins and she sweeps him up into the air on her umbrella or something? Oh, well, he's going to be doing this telly thing and he's got nothing to lose now. I mean, he doesn't care, does he? Now, Major will do anything. I mean, TV debate, game of twist, fart lighting competition, anything, you know. He can't really lose, so he's going to do this thing with Blair. And Blair will probably come out of it worse, because he's a bit weird. But that's it. It's the general election, and there's going to be a big TV head-to-head naked twister fight. But Paddy Ashdown's got to sit in a separate little box. Because he's not allowed to join in with them.
On the grounds that he's not going to get many votes and he's a bit of an irrelevance.
Yeah.
And yet Major is allowed to take part. Very odd. Sorry.
Laurie, who flagged up disunion in the Union?
Yeah, this is a suggestion that I think it was the Liberal Democrats, I think. I think that it was a couple of them, not the entire party. I think it was Malcolm Bruce and somebody else who I'd never heard of. He must be the shadow cabinet minister for something in the Liberal Party, but I never heard of whoever it was. But they said that we should do something, but as we were nearing the millennium, we needed to revive and reinvigorate the symbolism of the United Kingdom. And one of the ways in which we could do this was by replacing the flag and the anthem, because they felt the flag had been demeaned by the way which had been used by the National Front and by the Spice Girls, you know, because Ginger Spice had been wearing it as the miniskirt, hadn't she, and Old Spice or Mince Spice or whoever they were. And then there was a suggestion there should be a new flag, which is the Liberal flag, which should be a completely white one waved from the windows of the battle bus on election night. But that was flags and new anthems as well.
Isn't the national anthem got some horrible bit about Scottish people in it that nobody ever sings? Mm. There's a hidden verse where it just goes, "Let's go and have a crack at the jocks."
I was interested in my partner drawing a distinction between National Front and the Spice Girls. To my mind, the Spice Girls now are the National Front.
They are. Two Scottish Liberal Democrats propose scrapping the Union Jack and the National Anthem. They claim the flag has become associated with lager-swilling, xenophobic yobs and want it replaced by something a little less British. They're not planning, however. They don't plan to ditch all great British traditions, particularly the one about Liberals putting their foot in it on day one of every election campaign. Alan, listen to this song.
The sun has got his hat on, hip, 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 hooray. The sun has got his hat on and he's coming out today. Now we'll all be happy, hip, 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 hooray. The sun has got his hat on and he's coming out today.
Who this week, Alan, was basking in the sun?
Well, I see it's now left to me to do the political rectitudes. The others say they're all coming out for the Labour Party. And I have to say that the sun is now going to support the Labour Party, so the tits won't be confined to page 3. I'm now going to quit while I'm behind, rather like John Major. I didn't mean that, John. I'm a staunch Conservative supporter.
This is the news that the Sun newspaper has chosen to stick to its Thatcherite ideals and is backing Tony Blair for Prime Minister. The paper thinks that its readers will find Labour's policies more to their liking than those of the Tories. There aren't so many of them, and they appeal to the simple-minded. The Sun's backing came after Mr Blair met Rupert Murdoch at his Australian headquarters. He returned from the trip with a lovely brown tan, particularly on his nose. And the scores at the end of round one are Francis and Jeremy 4, Alan and Laurie 4 points. And we start round two with an item spotted in The Independent.
After 12 hours of confusion, Labour yesterday reaffirmed that it would not be spending any taxpayers' money on the replacement for the Royal Yacht Britannia. But last night, a spokesman for Tony Blair's office said, "We're not ruling out ever spending a penny on the Royal Yacht."
Francis, why should Governor not speak amateurishly unto Governor?
This wasn't in the election coverage. We've done with the election now, have we?
We have, yes.
Jolly good, that's a relief. Well, this is probably about the BBC, in that case.
Well, so it says on that pad.
But, thank you.
Kaufman.
Kaufman, yeah.
Kaufman said the BBC's run by idiots, and of course it's not. It's run by marvellous commissioning people with budgets and decisions to make about programme ideas. 7-hour variety packages featuring 35-year-old men. And it's a damnable lie that anything about the BBC is bad or incompetent or amateurish at all.
Yeah, but Gerald Kaufman, this is true. He's in a sulk about it, I remember now.
He's a bit of a sour old tart, isn't he, Gerald Kaufman? That's what I mean, he is, isn't he? He's always mithering.
Well, his only interest is in old Hollywood musicals, so why does he bother? He just spends all his time watching videos from Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers and that sort of thing. I shouldn't have thought it would...
What are you trying to say?
Nothing. Jude Collins.
This is the claim by the Select Committee that self-regulation hasn't been working and has led to too much bad language appearing on the BBC. And what a load of bollocks that is. The National Heritage Select Committee recommended there should be a new BBC regulatory body called Offswitch. Jeremy, your real question, why should patients be patient until after Easter?
The BMA, they seem to have reneged on this, but initially they seem to be saying that over Easter people shouldn't bother their doctor, and if there's anything wrong with them, they should just lie down in a darkened sepulchre for 3 days and then have a bit of a walk around the garden. But then later on they said, we're not saying that at all. And that's fine, you can just go in with whatever, with your chocolate poisoning. And Easter bunny bites. And Doc will see you.
It's the news that doctors are too busy to be called over the Easter holidays, which came as a shock to patients, or as we're now known, fund holder budget contribution units. Anyone phoning their surgery during the holiday will be greeted with an answer phone message on how to control high blood pressure. Patients who don't suffer from high blood pressure shouldn't worry, as they will by the time Easter is over. Laurie, listen to this.
I'm burning up the freeway early this morning. I'm a-passing everybody. Oh, nothing but corn, man, out of my way. I don't drive with my horn. Transfusion. Oh, nurse, I'm going to make a new resolution. I'm never, never, never going to speed again. Put a gallon in the Allen.
Laurie, who refused to put up any crash barriers?
James Furman, the head of the British Board of Film Censors over the David Cronenberg film of J.G. Ballard's Crash, which they've just decided it can go on general release, which is, I suppose, is good. I mean, it's an interesting film. It's the only film, I suppose, which encourages you to use your horn after you've had the accident. It's an interesting film. I mean, it's all about sort of how you have... you can only have orgasms if you're driving your car along very, very quickly. I suppose you give it a whole new meaning to welcome brake service stations.
It does occur to me that this is only a film, and Alexander Walker was going berserk saying, this is the most disgusting and depraved thing I have ever seen. I feel like going on a march somewhere. Where's my bedroom? And... it's a film. If it was an edition of Top Gear, then maybe we should be worried by it. It's pretend. No, because people say that driving too fast is because the car is an extension of the penis, but were that true, you wouldn't drive too fast, you'd just back in and out of the garage, wouldn't you? Or just polish it all the time.
British Board of Film Classification this week allowed the film Crash to be shown uncut. There's been widespread disgust at a group of perverts getting their kicks in foul and unnatural ways, though a spokesman for the censors said they were just doing their job. Several councils have warned the director, David Cronenberg, that if he tries showing the film in their cinemas, he will find himself running into a brick wall. Which Mr. Cronenberg replied, promises, promises. Alan, who had trouble with a wounded knee in the trouser department?
I suppose he's Clinton.
Yes.
Because I saw him just Thursday evening. Seems like only yesterday. I saw him being winched down the steps and into a food van at Helsinki Airport. I think they took him away to eat him. Things are bad in Russia these days. The whole reason that the summit was shifted to Helsinki was because they thought Boris Yeltsin couldn't make it to Washington. And there was old Yeltsin bouncing along the tarmac, and there was this thing with a leg stuck out in front of him. Like something out of Cronenberg's film. Big smile on his face, like something more out of Cronenberg's film. Perhaps Paula Jones will Air Force One. She is known as the Air Force One, actually. And he's also got a Navy One, and he's got 3 Army Ones. Several women in the fire service. But at the moment, these hors de combat are actually hors de combat, because he can't do anything. The only stiff thing about Clinton is this long leg he's got in plaster. Because he fell over at Greg Norman's house. God knows what he was doing there. It's a story for which the world is not yet prepared, like the giant rat of Sumatra. But anyway, he's turned up in Helsinki with his legs stuck out and on little wheels.
When he went to meet Boris Yeltsin in Helsinki, President Clinton had to be taken off the plane by forklift truck. Bearing in mind further allegations against him made in court in the past few days, it's all too easy to misread fork and truck in this context. Then after this, he was accused on TV of groping a hotel receptionist. Paula Jones claims he demanded oral sex and told her to keep her mouth shut. Before we reveal the scores at the end of round two, we've fed all the jokes made by the panel into our impartiality meter, and we've assessed the viciousness of the gags, the length of your reaction to them. And can I have the figures here? Yes, Labour Party 97.2% and Conservative Party 97.2%. And at the end of round two, the scores are Francis and Jeremy 8, Alan and Laurie 8. We begin round three with a cutting sent in by Trevor Gregory.
A man walked into a Burger King in Ypsilanti, Michigan at 7:50 a.m., flashed a gun and demanded cash. The clerk turned him down because he couldn't open the cash register without a food order. When the man ordered onion rings, the clerk said they weren't available for breakfast. The man, frustrated, walked away.
Francis, which Sloane clone is now going it alone?
Clone? Eh?
Well, it's not exactly a clone. It's the Princess Diana lookalike thing. Well,
yes, Alan's
one
right.
One's given up.
Well, she's a woman who claims to look like Princess Diana. She doesn't look like her at all, really. I thought she was a bloke in this transsexual thing in Court of Human Rights. I mean, she's a very woman with a big ootre and a large chin. She doesn't look anything like... She was more like Prince Charles, actually. And she's decided to back out of the limelight she's never really had.
She was made seriously ill by having it off with a Will Carling lookalike as well, wasn't she?
Did you see that wonderful thing this week from Japan about the scientists who impregnated a cow without using any sperm?
Yeah. Well, you would, wouldn't you? Well, if I were going to impregnate a cow, I'd be very careful how I did it.
About 3 weeks after we had the sheep, we've now got this pregnant cow with no father. And they do it by, they take an egg cell out, an unfertilized egg cell, and bathe it in alcohol, which stimulates it, apparently, and then gets pregnant, gets put back in the car. Sort of Oliver Reed's honeymoon all over again.
In her heyday, Miss Hance could earn up to £5,000 a day for personal appearances. However, she's recently discovered the real Diana has been undercutting her, agreeing to open the Happy Shopper in Harlesden for £75 in the taxi fare home. Jeremy, listen to this.
Letters of the world unite and take over. Stop the letters of the world. Hand it over.
Do you need a question, Jeremy?
This is your shoplifting, Reverend Papworth, who said that it's all right to steal from a superstore as long as you can find anything, which is very difficult in a superstore. They try and foil shoplifters by hiding the bloody eggs all the time. And I agree with him on that. I think it is fine to steal from... Because they try and giving you these reward cards. I don't want their charity. I mean, I can pay for my own shopping. I don't like this paternalist. All right, we'll look after you. All right, you be a good boy. You be a good boy. We'll look after you. I think if you want to patronise somebody, turn a blind eye to the old dears nicking the cat food and I'll pay my own way.
It also has transpired that Mr. Papworth had helped in the escape of Soviet agent George Blake. In those old traditional days, British agents were all gay. In his confusion, Papworth helped after he'd heard Blake was a shoplifter. Great laugh, sir. Thank you. Laurie, whose last musical enigma will finally be resolved?
It's Elgar, and it's the... somebody's talking about finishing off the Elgar Third Symphony. Because they've he made some notes, or he wrote some doodles, or he did something. And this person, I think, I can't remember his name, was Payne, somebody called, something like that. But anyway, he was going to finish off the Third Symphony, which is just as well, I suppose. I mean, as you were saying, that it was just as well that I suppose that Elgar finished off, although we'd had pomp without any circumstance and enigma without any variations. I suppose we hadn't finished those two. But there were some doodles all over the thing, which people are trying to decipher now, which say various things like, you know, the end is near, I can't possibly finish it. And then most mysteriously of all, Nigel Kennedy is a tosser.
Though they're going against the composer's last wishes, his family insists the symphony will be treated with great respect and are certain the Spice Girls will be up to the job. Dissenting voices have come from members of the Elgar Society who say many works are best left unfinished. Except in the case of Andrew Lloyd Webber, when they're best left unstarted. Alan, how was a sea lion disguised as a sightseer?
This is probably then to do with Operation Sea Lion.
Yes.
It's probably to do with a bloke with a little moustache. Yes. Who had a sort of guidebook,
which is Britain on 5 marks a day. And every kraut was going to be dropped on Hampstead Heath in the first great attempt at European unification by the Germans, was given a guidebook saying things like, if you're going to a pub, say, what's your poison? And will you have the other half? And all these sort of little things. And boarding houses to stay in. Because the Nazis were not really too good at being Nazis. They had to stay in a few English boarding houses first, and then they would really know how to take people apart. Please don't take the Schmeisser to the beach and oblige. And it's just come to light. They've just found all Hitler's guidebooks.
Secret Nazi plans for Operation Sea Lion, their invasion of Britain, were cunningly disguised as tourist brochures and are now up for auction. Closer examination revealed their plans also involved wrecking towns and fighting with the locals, an idea later adopted by Club 1830. The end of round three, the scores are Jeremy and Francis 10, but Laurie and Alan in the lead with 14. Before we start the final round, here's an advert seen in the Brighton Advertiser and sent in by Howard Baker of West Worthing.
For sale, mountain bike, top of the range. Owner selling due to pregnancy. Ridden only once.
Francis, your last question is a musical one.
For a small fee in America.
Francis, who's leaving Toy Town for Tinsel Town?
Ah, Noddy. At last, I know something. They're putting him onto American television, but they've had to make a few adjustments for the American market. They're convinced the Enid Blyton estate or whoever it is that Americans won't watch some sort of nice stories about a goody-goody. They think all American stuff is Tarantino now, so he's going to, he and Big Ears are going to go around wasting any wise guys who get in their way. And this is, they have to do this to sell it in the States, apparently. Awfully sad.
The sweet-natured, innocent lad will soon be mixing with the cream of American show business, but has been asked to steer clear of Michael Jackson. Other famous British children's TV characters have not had the same sort of luck in America. Plans were scrapped for Muffin the Mule when it was found to... It was found to be illegal in 18 states. Jeremy, if the grass is greener, who dares to win it?
It's the SAS sheep.
Yes.
Yes, the sheep in the New Forest have now developed SAS skills. They've learnt how to climb over a cattle grid in exactly the way that the SAS do it. Because you can get your boots jammed, can't you? Oh... And then you can give your ankle a nasty turn. And they've learnt all these things that the SAS, you know, the army can do, you know, like sort of unarmed combat, you know, which as we know means shooting people who are unarmed. And no, well, they climb over a cattle grid by one of them lies. We've seen the pictures in the paper, but you don't see them doing it in any of it. They just show a sheep and a cattle grid, and they won't be prompted to do it. But apparently, one lies there, and the other one climbs on its back, and somebody innocently thinks that it's practicing some kind... It's springtime, but they think it's some kind of innocent commando activity. Or at least this is what some very young reporter from the local paper said, "Mummy, what are those two sheep doing?" And he said, "Well, that one's giving the other one a lift over the cattle grid." And so this has now become an urban myth in the New Forest. That sheep, is it true? I mean, this is what they say.
They started strangling sheepdogs with piano wires. These are the commando sheep of Bramshaw who've learned to invade lush pastures using SAS techniques. Residents whose gardens are being wrecked have developed a cunning way of scaring the sheep away. They run towards them shouting, "I love you," in Welsh. Laurie, why can't shoppers pick up a puffin?
There's a penguin. There's a penguin called the McVitie or the United Biscuits penguin, which is a perfectly normal penguin, except it was covered in sickly milk chocolate, and it couldn't. It had a pronounced stammer. It was a penguin, and then there was a puffin, and this puffin was an Asda puffin, and that was a very much a normal puffin, except it was also covered in sickly milk chocolate, and it was about 25% cheaper than the other penguin, if you're still following this particular story. So the judge got very, very concerned about this because he felt that people mightn't know whether they were had a puffin in their mouth or a penguin in their mouth because they were very, very similar to each other. So he suggested that, in fact, the puffin could no longer pretend to be a penguin in those circumstances.
It's called passing off, I think, isn't it?
That's right, yes. Yes, it,
yes. Yes. You've got to protect consumers and that sort of thing. If you got home thinking you'd bought a penguin biscuit and you discovered it was an identical chocolate biscuit that was 10p cheaper, you'd feel jolly cheated, wouldn't you?
Oh, you'd feel very passed off.
Yeah.
They're different now.
First time,
it, it doesn't affect me. I just use a Cadbury's flake bar and stand by an open window putting it in and out of my mouth. It's just fun.
But it's also all those poor people who go into Waterstones thinking they're buying chocolate biscuits and come out and try and ram a paperback book in their mouth.
In a similar vein, the next people to be sued are the Spice Girls who've been blatantly passing themselves off as Pop-Tarts. And you could probably lick chocolate off them for around 15p as well. One fascinating fact is that the word penguin, and this is true, is one of the four words of Welsh that have actually entered the English language, the others being Cardiff City nil. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is from the Church Times last week. Seven women bishops from the Anglican Communion who were invited to visit England this year will not now be coming. The Reverend Donald Reeves said that his plan had been to introduce the women before the Lambeth Conference next year. Several dioceses had agreed to host visits, and some bishops were to have the women privately.
Jeremy.
This is from the Express and Star, and sent in by Richard Matthews of Birmingham, and it says, "Hello, hello, goodbye. A Smedic policeman's undercover bid to reveal a brothel in Bearwood failed when he was refused entry. He was speechless when he was turned away, but a pensioner was allowed in. Other officers then moved into the premises as part of an investigation, and afterwards a member of staff admitted they had barred the constable because they didn't like the look of him."
Laurie.
This is from a letter from Peter Meller, who says that while at a friend's wedding in Birmingham last week, I stayed at the Novotel Hotel. The following is transcribed verbatim from the welcome pack in the hotel room. Non-smoking rooms. Non-smoking rooms are indicated by a non-smoking sign in the ashtray.
Alan.
I'll do two, because I looked at the first one, it's sort of, I don't know. Well, I'll try it. I just noticed it in Lloyd's shipping list last week. It says, no, really. I'd be surprised what happens in the still watches of the night in my house. It's from Lloyd's shipping list. It says, overdue vessel, MV Stella Maris, Asuncion, March the 16th. Motor vessel Stella Maris is overdue at Asuncion. She sailed from Buenos Aires on January the 18th with a crew of 12 and 22,000 cases of whiskey. I just like the other one that I saw from the Sydney Morning Herald, which says, traditionally, the bulk of Australia's imports have come from overseas.
Thank you all. Now, with the biasometer standing at a dead set 143.7 points for each party, we reveal the final scores in the news quiz, which are Francis and Jeremy, 14 points, but this week's winners are Alan and Laurie with 18. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from The Independent, sent in by Ralph Smith of Sheffield.
It's a holy day for Reverend Cisco Cassidy, who's just been ordained over the internet and is now licensed to perform marriages, christenings and funerals. The Reverend Cassidy lives in East Belfast and is a three-legged cat.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Jeremy Hardy and Laurie Taylor. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson with Hugh Rycroft and David Spicer. The producer was Aled Evans.